Welcome back to Hyperbaric Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Masha, and today I have with me Ben Azadi. Ben is a well-known person in a ketogenic world, in a world of metabolic health. He is a founder of Keto Camp, and he is the host of number one ketogenic podcast, which is also called Keto Camp, right? Yes. And I'm really excited to have Ben with me today because we're going to dive into everything related to mitochondrial health, how ketogenic diet can help with that. Is it contraindicated for some people or not? And how can you combine ketogenic diet with hyperbaric oxygen therapy? Because after all, it's a hyperbaric podcast. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Hey, Dr. Masha, thank you for having me on your show.
Yeah, very excited. I'm very excited for this conversation. So let's start with the basics. For those people who've heard maybe about ketogenic diet and they heard that it's good for you, but some people think it's too restrictive because after all, they don't have enough information. So let's start with the basics, please.
I would love to. And you're right. There's a lot of misconceptions regarding keto. With its popularity, you know, what's interesting is that I was sitting down with Dr. Daniel Pompa a couple months ago. We were here in Miami just hanging out, recording some content. And he asked me a question that made me pause. He said, do you think keto is hurting more people than it is helping them? And I thought, that's a damn good question. And a few years ago, I would have said, it's no way it's hurting more people. But with the popularity and the way that people do it the wrong way and eat inflammatory fats, I do think it might be hurting more people than it is helping them. Now, with that being said, when it's done the right way, it is such an incredible ancient healing strategy. And that's what keto is. Like fasting, it's one of the best things we can do to harness the innate intelligence. And there's nothing new about keto. It's just nuanced or maybe new to some people, but the reality of it, keto is not a diet, it's a metabolic process. And every single one of our ancestors went through this metabolic process. Fast forward to the day we live in now, we've forgotten about this process. When we have here in America, close to 50% of the population by 2030 will be obese. We have diabetes and cancer rates. They're essentially in a keto deficiency. They're burning glucose and only burning glucose. And that's not good. It's not good for your health span, your lifespan. It's not good for your mitochondria, which we're going to talk a lot about today. So the way I look at keto, the way I teach it is that it is a metabolic process that we're designed to use, not forever. I don't teach it being in ketosis forever or being dogmatic about it, but I do teach it as a tool to flex in and out of, which is the premise of my book, Keto Flex. So there's a lot of research showing what it does. Number one, when your body is in a state of ketosis, those ketones are communicating with the mitochondria. And we know how important the mitochondria is for health and longevity and fat loss. And when your body is in a ketosis, the ketones are actually signaling to those mitochondria to create more. So it's creating mitochondrial biogenesis, very similar to HBOT, right? Because what it does, it's stressing the mitochondria. And some people hear that and they think that sounds like a bad thing, but HBOT is very similar. So is fasting. So are things like cold exposure. They stress the mitochondria and it forces them to adapt. The good mitochondria gets stronger and duplicate, and the bad mitochondria that's not producing energy efficiently, the body gets rid of through mitophagy and other processes. So ketosis does that, and it creates more cellular energy because of the duplication of mitochondria. So when we look at the electron transport chain and we look at how the mitochondria uses energy when it's burning glucose versus burning ketones, there's about 400% more energy being produced when the mitochondria are using ketones. And that's because of the mitochondrial biogenesis. And we'll get into some more ways to use keto the right way, but that's just a starting point right there. I would say it's a metabolic process, which is really important for the mitochondria and for inflammation.
So normally your mitochondria would choose glucose as their preferred fuel, right? So when somebody is not eating glucose, so when they're limiting carbohydrates, then it has no other option but start using fatty acids and produce ketones for energy. Is that how it works? That's why we need to limit those carbohydrates?
That's exactly right. And that's when we think about our ancestors, that's how they did it. Not intentionally. They didn't say we're going to do keto for a month, but their environment determined that. So they went through famine. They went through winter where there was not carbohydrates readily available. So by default, they burned through their sugar reserves, their glycogen stores in their liver and their muscle cells. They dropped insulin. And as that got depleted, then they had access to their fat stores. And as their body started utilizing the fat stores and glucagon started to increase, those fatty acids were then sent to the liver. And then the mitochondria within the liver start using those fatty acids and the liver produces ketones. And there are three ketone bodies. There is beta-hydroxybutyrate, which you would measure with blood. There's acetone, which you would measure with breath meters. And then there's acetoacetate, which you would measure with urine strips. I prefer measuring blood. It's the gold standard, looking at beta-hydroxybutyrate, because that's the only ketone body that actually could get through the blood-brain barrier and cross into the brain. So yeah, to your point, we got to drop carbohydrates and insulin levels low enough for us to be able to produce those ketones.
And then we start all those beautiful processes in mitochondria when they start to adapt. So basically they will multiply in numbers and they will also go through the process of mitophagy when mitochondria, which are not so healthy, would just die. Right?
Exactly.
And our body needs to get rid of it in that way. And what is healthy mitochondria? Like, what does a person with healthy mitochondria look like as opposed to a person with not so healthy mitochondria?
It's a great question. And that's really where the focus should be when it comes to biohacking and health and longevity. The mitochondria is where it's at. Every cell has mitochondria. And it depends on how metabolically active the cell is to the extent of how much mitochondria is within that cell. And the number one goal of the body, the innate intelligence, is survival. So that means the cells that are most needed for survival have the most mitochondria. When we think about the brain is very important for survival. We need to be able to see our prey, our predator, run away, fight, or whatever we got to do to survive. The brain is very important. Well, there are certain regions in the brain that have up to 2 million mitochondria in a single cell in the brain. And then when we think about the eyeballs, also loaded with mitochondria, that's important for survival. The ovaries have about 100,000 mitochondria in the ovaries, so important for reproduction. And as we go down the line here, other normal cells that are not so needed for survival have maybe a few hundred mitochondria. So that's how important the mitochondria are. When the mitochondria are not performing well, it creates mitochondrial dysfunction. And that is significant because the mitochondria are not just this power plant producing energy. That is one role, and it's a very important role. It produces ATP, which is the energy currency. There's also a dual role that research from Dr. Robert Navio from California has shown that the mitochondria also act as a surveillance system for threats, for cellular threats. And if there's too much of these cellular threats, too much stress, the mitochondria lowers energy production all for the sake of survival. But sometimes when that threat comes and the energy production is lowered and now the threat is gone, but the mitochondria gets stuck in that cellular response called the cell danger response. And that person has chronic fatigue. They start gaining weight. They have fibromyalgia, autoimmune disease. I mean, there's so many symptoms and diagnoses that are linked to mitochondrial dysfunction. Long COVID symptoms is exactly what's happening here. The person gets COVID, their stress bucket is already too high. Mitochondria lowers energy production. COVID is gone and it gets stuck in that CDR response. He calls it wartime metabolism. So what we want to do is help the mitochondria get into this peacetime metabolism. We want to support it. We want to help it produce more mitochondria. And that's where keto comes into play. That's where HBOT comes into play. So it's very important to have healthy mitochondria. As you have healthy mitochondria, you increase more energy, as we established. As you increase more energy, it also helps your body burn more calories. So you lose fat because it increases your basal metabolic rate. So it's very important.
I've heard the saying that you're as young as your mitochondria are, and you're also as healthy as your mitochondria. The health of mitochondria is super important. And as you mentioned, hyperbaric oxygen can definitely help with that. But what happens? Not everybody has access to hyperbaric therapy. Some people cannot afford it. So we, of course, looking for other therapies that could be helpful. And ketogenic diet, we know this from research, and we know this from clinical evidence, experience, anecdotal evidence, right? What patients report can definitely help with that. And it's a free therapy, right? Because it's, this is what you eat, or rather what you don't eat. And it could be combined with fasting as well, because fasting, can you tell us a bit more about that? How ketogenic diet can be combined with fasting? Is fasting really part of that, and how to utilize it?
Yeah, it definitely should be a part of it. It doesn't have to be, meaning you could still get into ketosis without practicing intermittent fasting. However, to your point, I do recommend doing it with fasting. I first recommend the person start off by doing keto first, getting fat adapted, meaning burning fat instead of sugar, 7 to 14 days. And then you pair that with intermittent fasting to really accelerate the results. Now, the way that we teach fasting is looking at it like a muscle. If somebody does have, they're in a CDR response, they have really low performing mitochondria, they probably don't want to do too much fasting, because fasting is a stress, as we mentioned, and doing too much, you might feel worse in a fasted state. So you want to build it up slowly and maybe go and do a 12-hour fast for a few days and see how your body responds, and then build it up to a 13-hour fast. And if you feel better, then you're on the right track. If you feel more fatigued, then you want to dial it down a little bit as your mitochondria is adapting. But to your point, that's a free tool. HBOT will give you incredible results. And if you get access to one, definitely do it, and do it frequently. If you can't right now, for whatever reason, fasting is a free tool. You actually save money because you're not spending it on food. Combine that with keto. A lot of people think keto is a high-fat diet. While that may be true, sometimes it doesn't have to be. You could also get into ketosis with intermittent fasting as well. So there's many ways to do it.
What about calorie-restrictive diets? Can they be combined with ketogenic diet as well? Or is ketogenic diet about getting enough calories, or maybe even more calories, but getting them from fat and a little bit of protein? Or rather, you can use that notion of calorie-restrictive diet to get into anti-aging benefits and amplify those.
Yeah, it's another great question, Masha. I like the benefits that come with caloric restriction when it's short term, and I don't like what happens when it's too long term, right? Because the metabolism adapts and it could be problematic. So I think we could get the best of both worlds in terms of the anti-aging benefits of caloric restriction without actually damaging the metabolism. And I think we could do that with Dr. Pompa calls feast, famine, cycling. And that is, you are, when you're eating, you're feasting and getting enough protein, which is very, very important. And then you fast and get all the benefits of autophagy, et cetera. And you balance out those two pathways of mTOR and autophagy, mTOR and autophagy. And that balance is different for each person. But you asked about the benefits of caloric restriction as it relates to ketones. Yes, a lot of these caloric restriction diets can get you into ketosis. But I think more important than focusing on the calories is focusing on the macros. And as long as, for most people, as long as your total carbohydrates are under 50 grams per day, you should enter a state of ketosis. Now, if you're more insulin resistant, type 2 diabetic, you need to restrict that probably under 20 grams, but you could always verify by testing your blood ketones, and 50 grams of total carbs per day is usually the upper limit for most people. There's different ways to go about it. I think caloric restriction has some great benefits in terms of anti-aging, but I don't think we need to do that on a continuous basis.
I had actually a discussion with Dr. Mindy Peltz, because you mentioned into going into state of ketosis when you're eating less than 50 grams of carbs a day, but some people would still have difficulty moving into ketosis. And we discussed how hyperbaric oxygen therapy can actually help them pull that switch, and it becomes easier for them. What is your experience with that?
Yeah, Mindy is fantastic. I love Mindy. She's in our group. I've heard anecdotally, right? I have a lot of my Keto Camp Academy students test their blood glucose and ketones. And a lot of them come into my program with severe insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, et cetera. And of course, you know, my recommendations are to get them into ketosis, have them do some fasting and work their way up. And then when they get more advanced or some that want to just jump right in the beginning, we talk about hyperbaric oxygen therapy and how, you know, let's find one close to you. Let's do some treatments there. So for those who have combined HBOT with keto and fasting, they definitely get faster results because all roads lead to what you said earlier, the mitochondria. It's like all of these are doing something similar with helping the mitochondria do their job. So yes, if you could combine it all, do it. I mean, you're just going to get faster results. I definitely recommend that.
Other people are sort of concerned with overwhelming their mitochondria with hormetic stress. Is it going to be too much hormetic stress if we do hyperbarics and ketosis? And some people would add cold plunges in there, I don't know what not, physical activity. These are all examples of hormetic stress. Do you find when you're doing too many things all at once, it can actually jeopardize the health of mitochondria?
Such a great question. Absolutely. Yes, I feel that too many people do too many hormetic stressors. And the goal is to increase that ceiling, that hormetic ceiling. And so many people's ceiling is so low that you do keto and fasting and HBOT and cold plunge all in the same week. And what happens to them? That hormetic curve drops and they actually feel worse. So if you feel like your mitochondria are just not performing well, you're not at an optimal pace with your mitochondria, and you start throwing in all these hormetic stressors, it's not a good idea. So I always ask people when they do cold exposure, for example, because you ask the average person, and cold exposure is great, don't get me wrong, but you ask the average person how long you should do it for, and it's like 3 minutes, right? That's the average. But that is not true for somebody who's mitochondrial damage. So I always ask people, after they've done the cold exposure, after they've done the HBOT, after they've done the sauna, after they've done the workout, which is also a hormetic stressor, how did you feel the rest of the day? If they say, oh, I felt great, I was more energized, I was focused, I got a lot of work done, you found a good sweet spot, whether it was 90 seconds of cold exposure or whatever you did for HBOT. If you feel, if they said, I feel drained, I felt more tired, you did too much. So that's the most important thing to pay attention to as you stack these hormetic stressors. How are you feeling the rest of the day? Something else you can do that I do recommend is looking at your heart rate variability, which I use the Oura Ring. And it's such an incredible gauge to your nervous system, because we know we have these two branches. We have the sympathetic branch of the nervous system, which is responsible for fight or flight, very important, but we don't want to be stuck there. And then we have the parasympathetic branch, which is more rest, relax, digest, and we want a balance of both. And when we look at heart rate variability, it's giving you a good idea of the adaptability of your nervous system. Somebody who's stacking too many hormetic stressors will see their heart rate variability drop. And if you see that continuously happening, you're doing too much fasting or too much HBOT or too much keto or whatever it is, your sleep is not good. If we see it increase, then you're finding the sweet spot. So that is the goal. Find your baseline for HRV, because everybody has a different baseline, and then work on building it up over time.
I'm really glad you brought this up. I'm so glad, because it's so important that people understand that. Because what can happen, sometimes they're thinking, okay, I'm creating too much oxidative stress, right? Because this is what hormetic stress in some ways is. So I'm just going to take more antioxidants, but I'll continue doing that. And it's just pushing constantly, that push. And also the body is getting too many messages. As a naturopathic doctor, I can say that when it's too many messages, our bodies, they get confused. So choose one therapy, maybe two, maybe three. I'm all for integration. And I'm going to ask you a question. So if a person were to choose one or two or three things to do, in your opinion, what is their best choice? Like, what is the best way to go? Where to start?
That's it. So I'm going to answer that as it relates to the mitochondria. And you're right, by the way, what you just said, like you're confusing the innate intelligence. What is it going to do? It's like you're let the body do its thing. If you throw too many things at it, it's not going to know what to do. You're pushing it towards certain directions. So we're on the same page for sure. So as it relates to the mitochondria, I think I've read a lot of books on the mitochondria. I've interviewed a lot of people. One of my favorite books is from Dr. Lee No, which is called Mitochondria and the Future of Medicine. Mm-hmm. And I've had him on my show recently. So there's a lot of ways to improve the mitochondria, but I think one of the best efficient ways is to move your body, to whether that's like just starting off with walking, if you're very sedentary, or you start jogging or sprinting, but moving your body, lifting weights, I think is probably the most effective and easiest way to improve mitochondrial density and all the amazing benefits. And then you could, you know, make sure you're recovering well with good sleep, et cetera. And then you could start throwing in ketosis and fasting and HBOT and all these great things. Red light therapy is also great for the mitochondria. But in terms of like something that you'll get a benefit, you'll notice a benefit right away and it's free, I would say movement, exercise, et cetera.
Yeah, I don't know. I always start with nutrition. That's how I was brought up. I come from naturopathic school. So I think I would start with the diet and then maybe physical activity. For somebody who is not as sick, maybe you could start with physical activity, no problem. But for somebody who is not, that really fit and all they can do is maybe move around the table and get tired, then I would start with a diet and definitely
so cut. So important that you shared that because everybody's different, right? We're meeting the person where they're at. So I love that. I agree with you 100%.
It maybe has to do with the fact that we're seeing different kind of patients, different kind of people that come to you, and patients that come to me, maybe they're sicker and just the state of health is not up to doing exercise. Going back to hyperbaric oxygen therapy and ketogenic diet. So the person is in keto.
nitrogen species, how it's getting rid of the free radicals and lowering inflammation. There's a lot of research. Lowering free radicals. Actually, a student of mine, her name is Callie, and she doesn't mind that I talk about her. She came on my podcast because she had a stage 4 thymoma, which is a really rare cancer of the thymus gland. And another friend of mine had the same cancer. His name is Owen Video. And same cancer. And they both went down the conventional route at the start. And then it didn't work for them. It kept reoccurring and they felt awful with chemo. So Callie, she discovered my Keto Camp Academy a couple of years ago. She was learning about keto and seed oils. And so she came into our world and I taught her about keto. I taught her about fasting. I taught her about HBOT and all these red light therapy, and all these biohacks. And she started to get better. And she was really given like a low survival rate. I forget what the percentage was. But the moral of the story is this. As of last August, so August 2022, she did a scan and it showed zero evidence of cancer, zero evidence of cancer. And Owen, same thing. And that is showing you how incredible the human body is when you remove the interference. And she did it with these metabolic therapies, keto, fasting, HBOT, other different conditions. Now, I'm not sure how much HBOT she did, so don't get me wrong there, but that is a part of the equation because the mitochondria, and it's not just these two. You asked the question, am I getting a lot of people? Yes, I've interviewed a lot of people who have overcome serious diagnosis with these metabolic therapies.
Cancer is a metabolic disease. So it's a disease of mitochondria, really, and how cancer cells, they really want to use glucose as their fuel source. So when we give them a different fuel source, they can't survive, they can't multiply. So basically cutting off the fuel supply. And it's not that you should do HBOT to cure cancer or this or that. You really should make that metabolic switch. Right. And whether you're using ketogenic diet or hyperbaric therapy or better, you're using those two together, right? Because everything is happening faster. That's the point. I think that's the whole point in cancer.
Exactly. It's a multi-therapeutic approach. It's just not one thing because cancer is caused by many things as well. It's not just one thing that causes cancer, to your point. And it's not a genetic condition like we once thought. It's a metabolic disease. It's mitochondrial dysfunction. And just one more thought here real quick. Dr. Walter Longo has shown with his research that cancer patients that are going to do chemo, when they combine getting into or their chemo treatments with a fasted state, it actually protects their immune system and protects them much more superior than if they were in a fed state. I think one of the analogies is like chemo is like a machine gun being shot at you because chemo is super strong, right? It's killing, destroying everything. But when your body's in a fasted state, your good cells kind of like hide out and they don't get sprayed with the, you know, the gunfire, but it's getting rid of all the bad guys at the same time. So it's powerful even if you go the route of chemotherapy.
The keto is a magical therapy when used properly. Is that correct? Because there's the right way of doing keto and then there's sort of wrong way, right, of doing keto. And you talk a lot about it on your podcast, in your videos, in your book. I mean, you explain, we can't go into that right now in this episode, because otherwise this episode will be like 8 hours long or maybe longer. But for people who want to learn more, you can definitely get all this information from all the resources that Ben has. And I love watching your videos. The way they made, they're really entertaining. And I mean, you really put your attention into video. And some things I already know, but I can probably see them from a different perspective. So I highly, highly recommend checking out Ben's YouTube channel if you still haven't. And the book, the Keto Flex, is excellent because it explains how to do keto the right way to get the benefits.
Thank you.
Ben, thank you so much for being on a podcast and explaining all these things. I learned a lot about the testing, that you should really do the blood test, right? Which one are you using?
I use Keto Mojo. They're my favorite, easy to use.
Yeah, I use them too. They're excellent and a great company, I think, with a great cause, which is also important. So we'll have the link in the podcast description. And Ben, I hope to see you again because I have so many questions that I didn't have time to ask you today.
We'll do round two. I'm glad that we got to meet in at the IHA here in Hollywood a few weeks ago, Hollywood, Florida. And thank you for having me on your podcast.
That was excellent. Guys, please give us likes if you found this episode helpful. If you know someone who can benefit from this information, please send them a link. Otherwise, I'll see you next week.